You're listening to the Prepared Homestead Podcast, equipping you to build a self-sufficient homestead in uncertain times.
We're your hosts, Sean and Monica Mitzel, coming to you from Sovereign Sunrise Permafarm in the mountains of northern Idaho. We're glad you're with us.
On today's podcast, we are going to be talking about preparing to homestead. This is a really important topic, and it's, I think, one that would be very interesting to lots of people out there who are wanting to do this, preparing to do this, hoping to do this, because we've gained a lot of insight in our journey into homesteading and preparing for it, because we haven't done this our entire lives.
Right.
And so we're going to be talking a lot about that and what we have done, what we recommend other people do as far as homesteading. Now, before we get into the main topic, we have had a question come up, and this is from Eric, who is moving to northern Idaho.
Going to be a neighbor.
Yeah, practically. And now, first of all, that's great, because it's always good to have more like-minded people in the same area.
Yep.
And I think it's going to be very important going forward in our country. And a lot of people might call that, well, that's the balkanization of America, and that's bad. You know, honestly, to keep pockets of freedom, I think it's necessary. And I think that people are going to have to kind of make those decisions and have to decide where, you know, are they going to go and live places that have more freedom and liberty? And that's going to be really crucial going forward. Anyway, his question was, as I start the transition up to northern Idaho this spring, as we retire from the Marine Corps, what tools can you recommend we have on hand right away? Anything you wished you'd had before you got to your homestead? I'm thinking power tools, chainsaw, wood splitter, etc. But any advice would be appreciated. Okay, very good question. But in reality, there really is not tools that you have to buy before you come up here.
Right.
So, but what I do have as far as advice is a few principles. A few principles involving the buying of tools and you know, and as far as homesteading is concerned. And this question actually ties in kind of nicely with preparation, because we're going to talk about
what we should do to prepare to homestead.
Right. Now, as far as tools specifically, there, again, we have a couple of principles that we would recommend people keep in mind as they buy tools. Now, as far as buying tools prior to getting up here, I would say you don't have to do that at all. There's really nothing you have to buy unless you're going to walk into a situation where you're coming here in the wintertime, for example, and you need to be able to get to your homestead. So you might need a plow right off the bat. You might need cords of wood, and so the tools to handle wood and that kind of thing. So if that is a factor, then yes, you're going to need some specific things, but I don't think that's really a factor for someone who's going to come out here in the springtime.
Right.
But a couple principles when buying tools, keep these in mind. First is this: you want to look for tools that are multifunctional, that they will fulfill multiple functions on your homestead. So in other words, you really should try and avoid the one-trick pony. Mm-hmm. All right, as far as tools are concerned. Now, I'll get back to that in a minute, because there is a time and a place to buy
specialized
tools, but we recommend for those types of things, that's where you want to look to community and maybe even getting together with neighbors or you're in your community somehow and going in on that specialized tool, because a lot of times it's not worth it to buy the tool that does the one thing.
Right.
Right. So we want to look for multiple functions in your tool buying. And here's a second principle. You cannot afford to go cheap.
Right.
And, you know, this is outside tools, inside tools.
Absolutely. Yeah, because when you end up, you save money buying the cheap thing. Now, all of a sudden, you have to replace that frequently instead of having a high-quality tool that now can be used for years and years.
Right. So what's an indoor tool example that has multiple functions and that you cannot afford to go cheap?
Well, like the hand grinder. I got a good quality hand grinder to grind meat, to grind oats and other grains. And you can get cheaper, but you're probably not going to get the same quality of the grinding, and you're not going to get the same quality of the product that will last for a long time.
Okay, that's good. As far as an outside example, I will use hatchets and axes, or in mauls. You know, you can go buy the cheapest maul at Home Depot that you can find. But that thing is going to fall apart on you in the first season. And so that's what we mean by that. You can't afford to go cheap. It's much better to actually buy a high-quality tool that's going to last you years and decades as long as you take care of it.
Right.
That's what we mean by you cannot afford to go cheap. Now, as far as specific machinery, this is my kind of rule of thumb, and this is something that I learned the hard way. You want to go heavier than you think. And what I mean by that is, for example, a chainsaw. Chainsaw was mentioned in the question. Yeah, you're going to need a chainsaw, but you don't need to buy it ahead of time. Go one step bigger than you think. Now, I don't want to recommend a specific brand like a Stihl or a Husqvarna. Both, I think, put out really good chainsaws. But I would almost go to the commercial level. Okay, maybe the lower or mid-range commercial level on something like a chainsaw. Especially if you plan on it. If you're going to put up your own wood every year, you want to do that. You will want to do that. Now, So my one regret that I have is I wish I would have went heavier on my chainsaw. Now, is the chainsaw working? Yes. But I'm working that thing hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have appreciated a step up. So be it. It's working fine right now. I will eventually get another chainsaw for step up, but I'm going to use this one.
Right, because we got it.
Absolutely. Okay, and so same thing with like a tractor. Not that you have to buy a giant machine, but, if you think you're going to buy a small tractor, a low horsepower tractor and get all the things you need done, the reality is that you would have appreciated a bit larger tractor. Okay, so whatever you think you need as far as machinery, go one step up. You can't afford to go cheap. So that would be my advice as far as, in making that transition, coming up here. No, you don't need to buy anything specifically before you get up here, but keep those in mind. You want multifunctional tools. You want a high quality, and you want to go heavier on machinery than you think, at least one step.
Yeah. And the thing is when you actually do get to your homestead, you'll be able to evaluate much more effectively what tools you need in what order.
Exactly. That's really the point there. That's an excellent point, is you don't know exactly what you're going to need. And some things are constant. You're probably going to need a chainsaw, and you're probably going to need some other tools like that. But for the specifics, you need to get up here and get on the ground, get to know the area, get to know your homestead, and then it'll become abundantly clear what you need.
Yeah, because some tools we really did need right away, and others we could wait months to get it because we weren't doing that particular task at that time. So, maybe that's, you have money that you've saved and you want to be able to use it wisely, and you're going to have a little bit more later so you can spread out the purchasing of your tools. You don't have to do it all in one bulk and try and have every tool you possibly need for homesteading before you move on to your homestead.
Right. Right. Now, one more thought on the single function tool, like a wood splitter. For example, and it really has one function. I mean, maybe you can come up with some more, but splitting wood, that or anything like that, or another really good example would be a defeather. If you're going to grow a lot of your own meat chickens, for example, a defeather does one thing. It defeathers birds,
right?
Which is really great. And if you're going to do lots of birds, then you probably want to defeather. If you're only going to raise 20, 30, 40, 50 a year, you could get away with not having one.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're going to be in the hundreds,
yeah,
you really should invest in one. It'll save you so much time. It's worth it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, but with those single function tools, you want that single function tool to be able to supply or feed multiple elements. So right. In this case, we're talking about people. So if you could find a neighbor or some friends or so you reach out in your community and go in on, say, a defeatherer, that makes that relatively expensive purchase well worth it.
Yeah.
And, so for example, if you're only going to do 100 chickens a year, you may want a defeatherer, and that's perfectly fine. But, that's really not utilizing that defeatherer. That defeatherer can do thousands of birds a year.
Right.
So you're not really not utilizing it to its fullest. So you can do one of two things. You can spread that out so it's servicing multiple elements, multiple people. Or you can turn it into an income generator.
Right.
Okay, any tool that like that. So that's what I would say about single function tools. Think about it pretty heavily. And if you are going to get one, which is fine, even like a splitter, maybe it's a little side business, or maybe you're going to go in on it with two or three other people, and then that thing moves around to different homesteads. And that would be a good example. The single homestead log splitter, yes, it does save a lot of time, and it's pretty handy. Although someone who's very adept at using a splitting maul, it can probably split just as fast. It's just going to be a little bit more energy output.
Right.
And
there are people, too, that rent out that type of equipment. They'll rent out a defeatherer to somebody, so you don't necessarily have to make the income by processing
by
birds.
Yourself or...
But maybe you rent it out. And we have a friend who owns an incubator, a nice big incubator, and he rents that out.
Yeah, right. That would be another good example. Okay, so I hope that helps. And now I want to do is move on to our main topic. But first, I got to talk about last night real quick, because I'm really tired, so I'm probably stumbling all over myself today, but that's all right. But we had we were like practically overrun with coyotes last night.
Yeah.
3 o'clock in the morning. Really interesting happened. And this happens, every so often here. But last night was pretty intense. A lot of coyotes, really close. I mean, like in the perimeter, probing the lines. And we were alerted to this from our livestock guardian dog. He does a great job, and he did his thing, and he alerted almost right away, woke us up, and you could very easily discern all the coyotes that are yip, yip, yipping out there really close and in and around the area. Now, our farm dogs, our indoor dogs, including a livestock guardian dog.
I know. She's supposed to be outside. She's outside during the day. She comes in with me at night.
That's true. She is outside during the day and gives Bear our 24-hour livestock guardian dog a break. So he, a lot of times you'll find him sleeping in the barn in the daytime.
And she's sitting out up alert.
Barking at the forest.
Yeah, I know.
just making sure that nobody's going to come close. Yeah. Anyway, she alerted inside as well, and so did our other farm dogs, Border Collie and a German Shepherd. And so they're all going crazy at 3 o'clock, and you can clearly hear all the yip, yip, yip happening. Now, our technique to basically chase off the coyotes at night like this is very effective. And what we do is this. We don't let the pack out. I don't want them running off and chasing packs of coyotes, a mile away.
Which they will.
Yeah, and getting into, fights with them. So what we do is we immediately put them out on the back deck. And then they're going crazy on the back deck. And then our livestock guardian dog down with the goats and the sheep is kind of going crazy. And that separation and those multiple large dogs barking from different areas so far has 100% of the time chased them off.
Yeah.
They've hung out for a little bit, but then they're out of there because I really think it confuses them. They're not sure where all these big dogs are
right,
at.
Right, all the barks are coming. And honestly, the livestock guardian dog in particular, Honey, inside... Her bark is so loud and almost is painful to the ear.
Yeah.
It's like, whoa. She has a very powerful bark. And when she gets out there, her voice is spreading out everywhere. So, yeah, they definitely scared them away.
Very cool.
It was good.
It was good. And it took me a long time to go back to sleep.
Yes.
So I'm tired today. Anyway, they did their job. So, none of our rabbits, chickens, goats, or sheep were to be had by the Coyotes last night.
Yeah, it was great.
Okay, so on to our main topic. And how do you want to handle this? You just want to start and just jump in?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, when we're talking about preparing to homestead, we're not just talking about skills that you need to learn or things. There's also some financial things you have to do. There's a mental
adjustment.
Preparedness that you have to do. This is a totally different lifestyle, and we speak from experience. I mean, being in the Marine Corps for 24 years and kind of being city folk, I guess, just
suburban folk.
suburban. I mean, we didn't really live in the city ever, but it was a major adjustment for us to make this shift. And fortunately, for several years before, we had been preparing.
Yep.
And so it wasn't quite as traumatic as
it
could have been.
It was very difficult, but it was overall a smooth transition because of that preparation.
Yes. And even for our children, because of the talking and the preparation there's a mental shift that really needs to happen before the move is made so that everybody's sort of embracing this new, totally new lifestyle that adds a lot of work.
Yes.
It really
absolutely.
Does.
I'd say the first thing is that you have to decide mm-hmm. that you're going to do this, and then you have to commit
right.
to it. This is goes beyond like, oh, that sounds really cool. It's really interesting. That would be awesome. Well, you hear tons of stories. You talk to all the old timers around here,
yep.
and they will tell you, be like, so many people have come and gone.
Yeah.
So many. We have neighbors that have been up here on this mountain for decades. And they're like, oh, yeah, we see people come and go all the time. All the time. They come out here. They're all motivated. They jump in. And a year later, they're gone.
Yeah. Because they didn't spend time preparing themselves and understanding really what they were getting into. And I know I've written about this before. I've blogged about it. And that you can kind of idealize and the vision of homesteading, sitting and you're surrounded by the beauty of God's nature, forgetting that, there's a lot of work that comes along with that. Forgetting
that.
You're
going to have food growing everywhere. Yeah. Animals are going to come eat out of my hand.
Right.
It's going to be like the
And you forget, like, huh, well, the animals not only need care, but if they get sick, we're it.
Right. They die on you.
Yeah. And, there's a lot of, there's a big learning curve, and there's a lot of things that you have to sort of mentally prepare for. And
I think you're really hitting the nail on the head. It's so much more than a physical preparation. It's a mental preparation.
Yeah.
Really, that's a huge part of this.
Yeah, it is. And when we talk about commit, we're trying to get away from that idea of like, yeah, that's a great idea, or that sounds really exciting, but rather committing yourself so fully that it doesn't matter what obstacles come in your way, no matter what failures or frustrations might come, that you continue to pursue your goal. That's commitment.
Yes.
Commitment is fully throwing yourself into this thing and not letting anyone stop you.
Right. And, this goes into all areas of life, of course, but in preparation for going back to the land or homesteading, it's vital because most people would say that they are committed, but really what they are is just interested.
Right.
And so you have to be committed. Like you said, you have to be all in.
Right. And when you say I'm committed, that means that you're willing before you make the change to actually start making changes in your life so that when you make that transition, it's not so horrible and that your children are going, why did we do this? And, you're wondering the same thing. Like, I had no idea that this was going to come. And you know what? You will hit lots of things and you are going to say, I had no idea. But that won't matter to you. Go, well, I had no idea, but here it is. And let's move on.
Exactly.
Let's accept it and, let's learn and let's move on. And maybe you make some mistakes and you learn from it and you move on. That's commitment. Commitment is continuing even if you trip and fall on your face.
Right. So very good. Now, so someone has decided and they've committed. Let's talk about some steps that they can take to now prepare. Okay. So they've got the mental framework is there and, they've decided and they're committed. Now, what do they do?
Well, I would say one of the first steps, that we recommend is unplugging from the matrix.
Absolutely. This is great. We talk about this quite a bit, actually, and I've written about it. But this is, we think it's critical.
Mm-hmm.
We really do. It's kind of hard to be a homesteader and still be addicted to cable TV and your shows and entertainment and sports and everything like that.
Yeah, it's almost impossible. And the reason I say that is not because I go, well, if you watch movies, you're obviously not a homesteader, but because you have homesteading requires a lot of time. A lot of time. And if you're used to just being mindlessly entertained all day, and then suddenly you're expecting yourself and your children to move from this mindless entertainment to productive work on a farm or a homestead, you're sadly mistaken. It's not going to be that easy.
Right.
It really isn't. And this is the kind of thing you can easily prepare in advance. And honestly, we recommend this even for people who aren't going to be homesteading.
Oh, right. Of course. Of course. We're just saying it's especially important
if you're going to do this. It is. But if your family has an issue with this, even if you're not stepping out and homesteading or you don't plan on growing a majority of your own food or anything, please consider, you know, some of the steps that we're going to talk about here to try and unplug your family a little bit and save them from the matrix
that's right.
Desires to indoctrinate them and turn them into consumers.
Into mindless consumers that are compliant.
Exactly.
Very compliant.
They're excited about the next movie that's coming out, and they know everything that's happening in the sports. They know all the stats, and, you know, they're playing the next big video game, and, you know, their whole life revolves around some sort of imaginary world that doesn't even exist.
Right. Yeah, I mean, again, not saying that people can't have any type of entertainment in their life. We're just saying that you need to seriously consider this step.
Yeah.
And at the very least, reduce
the amount that you're watching it.
Right.
And you're drooling in front of the boob tube, basically.
It's reduce the mindless entertainment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, interestingly, this is a poll that was done in 2014, a survey, actually, that showed that adults and children, on average, spent 5 hours a day either with television or video games.
5 hours a day.
5 hours a day.
That's like honestly, most people's entire free time.
Yeah. It really is.
It's their entire free time.
Yeah. I think, you know, the majority of the kids and I think the average American family, people are coming home from work or school and turning on the television.
Yeah.
Children are sitting in front of video games. Now, this is not including social media, texting, you know, podcasts or
getting
radio.
Getting sucked into emails, you know, beyond what you're trying
YouTube.
To.
YouTube. I mean, this isn't including any of this. So it's just television and video games, and you're talking 5 hours a day. It is almost a full-time job.
Right.
It's a full-time job.
It's hard to be
job.
Mindless.
Yeah. It's hard.
It's hard work.
Yeah, if only people paid us for it, but they don't.
Yeah.
You don't get paid, and you waste all of that time. And the beauty of this, though, is that even if you are one of those average people and your kids have televisions in each of their rooms and they go to sleep watching TV or movies, that the good thing about this is that when you start decreasing the time, now you suddenly have all these free hours to be able to use in a productive way.
Right. And especially for those like us who didn't grow up on farms or homesteads.
Right.
But they want to do this. Well, guess what? There's a big learning curve.
There really
is. And there's a lot to do, even in preparation. You're not even out on your own property yet. There's a lot to do. And quite frankly, you don't have time to watch TV 5 hours a day.
You really don't. And we do understand that reading about the skills is not the same as doing them. We really do. This last year, as we were pushing through trying to do all of these things and establish our entire homestead, we were like, well, we read about it, but it's somehow not working out the way that we read.
Right, or it's just like, that was a little harder than it
A lot harder.
It, seem.
it only took up a paragraph of instruction, and we just spent a week doing this.
Yeah.
So we do get that. However, having that experience, having read it, there was at least a knowledge base for us to be able to build from.
Right.
And we knew where to reference the information when we needed it.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was key. Yeah, and again, we know that experience is the great teacher, but you know, to develop that base of knowledge is an important step. really an important step, and you know, you don't discount that. It's usually the old timers that have been doing this 20, 30 years say, you know, nah, you can't read this in a book. Well, yeah, you can.
Right, you can.
It doesn't mean that it's going to replace, you know, the entirety of your education in working with whatever it is you're doing, but it sure helps.
It does. And, you know, listening or getting to know people who have done stuff like this in, you know, podcasts even, the Prepared Homestead podcast.
That's right.
Even can educate you and help you, and you're learning from their experience, and you're learning information that maybe you hadn't even thought to research before. So getting all of that knowledge base before you go is great, and you cannot do that if you're spending all that time in front of televisions, video games, and movies, or even social media.
Right.
It's not going to help you. So one of the ways that you can decrease your time that you're spending is, first of all, take a real evaluation of how much time your family is spending.
Right. It's probably more than you would guess.
It always is.
Yeah.
It always, you go, yeah, we only watch a couple hours a day. Well, when you start adding up, you know, the amount of time that your daughter, who has her own television, has her TV on in her room, you kind of go, oh, okay. So if you really take, I don't know, follow,
take an inventory.
Yeah. For a week, and say, okay, each time you're on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, each time you're texting,
playing video games,
or watching television, or movies, or Netflix, or YouTube, or anything. Each person evaluating that, from your youngest, who maybe sits in front of television while mom is preparing dinner or cleaning the house, to the oldest person in the family, the mom and dad, and then average that out and find out, well, really, how much time are we wasting?
Right. That's good. Now, one thing I want to mention real quick. Because, you know, up until like the last, I'd say, 10 years, when Netflix was all CDs that would come through the mail, DVDs that come through the mail, there was this transition period where people, you know, of course, everyone was had cable TV back then.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a kind of a big step to come off cable TV, which we did a long time ago.
Yeah.
In fact, we've rarely ever had cable TV. Now, we would, at that time, we had Netflix, so we'd watch, you know, at that time, you could get, I don't know, two or three movies.
In the mail, yeah. At a time.
A week or whatever. And that was a serious reduction in watching TV. Okay, so you could go from the 5 hours a night on average, you know, the average American, 5 hours a night, that's 35 hours a week of watching TV, down to 2 to 3 movies. So you're going from 35 hours to 6 hours, say, a week.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a significant reduction. And it was kind of fair to say, like, hey, we made this intermediate step and we got rid of cable TV, but we have Netflix.
Right.
Well, guess what Netflix is now? I mean, it's, you know, it's
streaming.
It's streaming on demand.
On demand.
And it has, you know, all these great shows and everything else. And they're easy to get sucked into because they're fun to watch.
Yeah.
And so when people say, we don't have cable, we have, you know, Netflix and Hulu and Amazon, they're probably watching just as much.
Yeah.
So they've just replaced it. But, you know, in their minds, they've said, well, we don't have cable TV.
Right.
But all they're still doing 35 hours a week.
Yeah. It's very easy because Netflix, I mean, the offerings are increasing all the time. They're coming up with their own shows and their own, you know.
It's alluring.
Yeah. So that you really need to pay attention to what your family is watching and then make a plan to reduce.
Right, because nowadays, if you don't have cable TV, that doesn't mean anything.
It doesn't
matter. Still might watch 35 hours a week.
Oh, easily. And, you know, there's I don't even know many people who do have cable TV anymore because everything's on demand. Why would I buy cable TV? It's kind of going out.
It's almost obsolete at this point.
Right. You have so many on-demand offerings out there that's a much better way for people to be able to choose what they want to watch when they want to watch it. So anyway, make your plan. You know, look at it and say, okay, we watch on average 5 hours a day, each of us. Maybe some of you watch more than others, but that doesn't really matter. Make a plan to say, okay, this month we're going to cut this in half. And then write it down and limit those times. And you have to hold yourself to it. That's probably going to be one of the hardest, especially if you've gotten addicted to watching a particular show at a particular time every week or every night. You go, okay, we go to bed at this time and we watch show, you know, a few different shows for 3 hours. And you don't think about that as enabling you to have productive time. And maybe at night you wouldn't be as productive, but it also keeps you up later. So you're not able to get up as early and be productive in the morning. Those are the most productive hours of the day.
The reality is when you're watching those shows, you know, it's just going to lead to when those shows run out, then you're going to have to replace it and find other shows. You've now developed a habit of watching shows.
Right. That's your habit. You get in bed and you watch TV, or you come home from work and you plop down on the chair and you watch TV. And so you have to be willing to break those habits and hold yourself back from feeding the flesh all the time. It also increases consumerism, you know, because you're sitting there watching the things that are out and what you don't have, and it's also alluring, and it can seriously indoctrinate, especially your children, where they're watching things mindlessly, passively, and not filtering it through any kind of, filter. You're just taking in the information and accepting it as truth, and laughing about it and using a lot of emotion to bring in ideas.
Yeah, and those ideas become your reality.
Yes. And then you don't even maybe know how you got that idea.
Right.
But it came to you mostly through television, which nowadays you can sit down and if you're evaluating a television show, you can see so much...
worldview.
Yeah,
I mean, socialism. Every organization, every show comes from a particular worldview.
Exactly.
Okay, so then we know that it would be beneficial to cut all this out. And then how do we fill it?
Okay, well, so then we were talking about, you know, reading.
Mm-hmm.
Reading is probably one of the best ways to prepare yourself, not only mentally, but, mentally.
Yeah. Yeah, and reading is key. And here's how powerful it is. And it's not like you have to spend hours and hours a day.
Right.
Check this out. The average adult American reads at around 300 words per minute. And if you just applied 20 minutes a day, okay, just 20 minutes a day, you would be able to read the average book. And again, we're just talking about averages here, mm-hmm. real general numbers, in about 10 days, okay, give or take a day or so. That means that in 1 month, you would read 3 books. Now, for most people out there, they're like, well, I didn't read 3 books this last year.
Right.
So, I mean, that's great. And then, you know, that's 36 books in a year.
Right.
Now, if you applied that and you were starting to read a lot about homesteading and everything else, to say you have a year or 2 years before you're going to get out on the land, think about how much better prepared you're going to be. Yeah, you don't have all the experience to back it. But you do have that huge knowledge base that is going to make your initial experiences better and the learning curve on the ground easier.
Yeah. And when you get on the ground, it does trigger all the things that you were reading. And you go, oh, okay, yeah, I remember reading about that. And I can finally apply what I've been reading and learning. The other thing that we recommend is, especially if you have a long commute to work, is listen to educational podcasts.
Right. Or you know, DVDs, whatever.
Oh, yeah. Or even CDs. Audiobooks. There's a lot of audiobooks out there now that are really helpful.
Yeah. Pick something that's worthwhile.
Right.
Pick something that you're actually going to learn something from. Something that's going to motivate you and help you achieve your goals. Please steer clear of the comedy and the sports.
Yeah, which, by the way, the comedy podcasts are always the most popular. It's the number one podcast people listen to.
Yes.
Comedy.
Millions and millions of people listen to comedic podcasts.
Yeah.
That's just another indicator of our entertainment-minded culture.
Yep.
We want to be entertained. Make me laugh. Make me happy. Make me, I want to be a drone.
Yeah,
I'm a zombie. You know,
you don't want
me a happy zombie.
For some reason, in our culture, in America specifically, but probably in Canada and places in Europe too, but the kind of Western culture, we've somehow equated fun with mindless entertainment. That's what we've decided that fun is. Fun. If you are working and you love what you do, that's not fun. That's work, and that doesn't count toward fun. you have to be mindlessly entertained. You have to go to a movie. You have to listen to a comedian. You have to do things like that in order to be having fun.
Yeah. Another lie, right along that same vein, is that we are somehow depriving our children if they don't have fun. If we're not, you know, if we don't let them play video games, if we don't let them watch, you know, their favorite shows that all the other kids are watching, we're depriving them.
Yeah.
How did we get there?
I don't know when it happened, but it certainly has happened over the last probably 30 years. A big change, because even when I was growing up, you know, we didn't have television for years, and nobody ever was shocked over that. They never went, "What? You don't have TV?" They were like, "Oh, well, I have a TV." But it was, you know, everything, all television was so small. We spent so many hours outside playing, and really that's where our fun came, was outside building forts and building trails and catching snakes, riding bikes and doing things. So we weren't expected to be sitting around playing video games. There really weren't that many video games around.
Now, here's another thing you can do for your children that is, it would be a blessing to them instead of the curse that is letting them be mindlessly entertained and not having any work. Okay, and that is, the blessing is kind of weaning them off of that, or at least reducing that, and giving them work.
Mm-hmm.
There's few better things that you can do for your children than give them a good work ethic.
Right.
And especially in preparation for homesteading. That's really important.
Well, yeah. And if you decide that you want to include your children, which you should, by the way, in this preparation, you know, giving them projects of a small garden plot that's theirs, and you go through the whole process of how do we prepare the garden, and how do we plant the seeds, and how do we cultivate and weed or whatever. So the kids are learning a valuable skill and getting something for the fruit of their labor. I mean, they're actually going to eat what they've grown.
Yeah.
You know, building small little building projects, whether it's bird feeders or bird houses, it's teaching them some basic building skills, and it's doing projects together as a family, having them do something that's productive and will help them be able to do even more when they actually get out to homestead.
Yeah, that's right. And I would say, I would add to that, those are great, is that you need to add the volume. You need to have a lot of volume. I mean, I'm saying sheer work, even if you have to make stuff up.
No, it's true.
I mean, you do. You have to start getting them used to doing heavy work.
Yeah.
Lots of work. Okay, doing a 30 minutes of chores a day in a suburban environment, where, you know, they have to take out the garbage, and then they, you know,
they make their own bed.
Make their own bed, and they help with the dishes after dinner. No.
Yeah.
You need to start making stuff up.
Yeah, no, it's true, because when you get to a homestead, the amount of work the kids have here is...
It's going
to
be 10 times.
Yeah. That. It's even if you do try and give them an hour and a half of, you know, hard work where they're maybe mowing a lawn with a hand mower, hand push mower,
right,
is still going to be way harder out here. Over a year, you know, a year and a half that our kids have been working on the homestead has toughened them up.
A lot.
Yeah, a lot. We think back when we first got here and just, you know, there were sometimes tears and complaining over the calluses and the blisters. And now
they laugh about that.
They laugh. I mean, I was talking to one of our kids the other day saying, you realize a year ago, you know, that you were crying over the same job. And it's like, what? You know, total embarrassment. And like, I don't remember doing that. And I think, well, yeah, it's because you're so much tougher now. You can't imagine having that attitude toward the work that you think is now the easy stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I know. Making kindling or whatever. It's like, well, that's mindless. Whereas a year ago, it was like, that was a concentrated effort to try and make kindling and tinder. So it's
funny.
It's nice to see the change in the children.
Yes, absolutely. And so, you know, that's definitely a way that you can help prepare, giving them more work. Even if you're, like I said, even if you're making stuff up.
Yeah. Or maybe you find... You know, you find a widow or an elderly couple that needs help with cleaning up their yard and mowing and trimming trees and pulling away branches. And maybe they've got lots of bushes that need to be pulled or whatever. Find work for your kids. So they're physically working hard and they're learning what it means to work hard.
Yeah. And the other thing I would say is that for the family, the other mental shift that needs to be done whether you're doing it yourself or you're trying to instill this in your kids, is become more entrepreneurial in mind, in mindset.
Mm-hmm.
Because the bottom line is when you get out on the homestead, whether you're going to actually sell things or not doesn't matter. You're going to have to become entrepreneurial in some aspects. You know, whether it's acquiring things, it's talking to all these different people, you're usually working through Craigslist and different forums and groups to obtain animals, and there's cooperation, and then there's acting alone. I mean, there's a lot of stuff where if you develop an entrepreneurial mindset, it will help you. Never mind the fact that we always recommend that you develop multiple streams of income. And so, you know, to do that, you obviously have to be entrepreneurial. Even right. if you have an off homestead job, we still recommend this. Like, well, what is your family business? If you're on a homestead, your family needs to have a business, even if it's small, even if it's just helping you run operations. You need to come up with one, two, maybe three different things besides whatever it is that's, you know, keeping food on the table.
Yeah, and again, I mean, I know we've talked about this before, but that also gives an opportunity for the children to start learning how to build a business, how to run a business, and how to deal with customers and talk with people.
Right.
It's really it's a great growing experience, not only for the parents, but as long as you include the entire family, for your children as well. There's no class in school that can prepare them for being an entrepreneur, like actually running their own business.
Absolutely. So we have one of our children has a videography business and a rabbitry.
Yes.
That's what she's doing. And we have another son who is basically starting a woodworking business this year.
Yeah.
And in fact, has already sold stuff. So he really has started, but getting more details, starting to like, okay, more than just, okay, I made a few things and I sold them to some customers.
Right, he's going
to
start building a plan and putting together goals for his business.
Right.
It was interesting, though, the conversation that we had with Lindy, our daughter, who owns the rabbitry, last night. She added eight more rabbits to her rabbitry.
Right, so she's up to seven does and $2.
Yep.
And, you know, and just do the numbers. That's going to produce a lot of
it
rabbits.
Is. And I, you know, she went from,
never mind the
grouse
we have right now.
Right. This is easy, you know, this to suddenly, oh no, I feel overwhelmed. And we were like, okay, this is when, as your business grows, you have to start really getting serious about making a plan. And
right.
so, you know, she's learning, I have to have a daily plan. I have to have a weekly plan. I have to understand where the does are in their cycle, and where when the grow outs are going to need to be butchered.
Yeah, she has to manage a pretty intense calendar. What is their window of being due? When are they going to be weaned? When are they going to be processed?
When
are they going to be rebred?
Yep.
I mean, this is, you know, it's intensive.
Yeah. And then not to mention marketing, making, you know, contact with customers who would want to purchase the rabbits.
Yeah. Understanding the laws in our state. It's everything.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot to it.
So, you know, she's getting educated very quickly in running your own business by running this rabbitry.
Right.
And it's a great experience for young people. And so really don't underestimate the importance of starting family businesses, because you never know which one of your kids might become interested and want to take that piece over, and you keep a small percentage so you can get some meat or eggs or whatever.
Yeah.
And they run that business.
Yeah, absolutely. We highly recommend that. So what else? What do you want to talk about next? You know, we've talked about the mental aspects, some of the physical things that they can do, turning their car into an academy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, starting a reading program, and, you know, and mapping out and list out the books that you want to read, and start working through them.
Right.
You know, even 20 minutes a day can take you really far. The importance of giving your kids work, becoming entrepreneurial.
Yeah, withdrawing from the matrix.
Absolutely.
So that you can free up that time.
Unplug from that matrix. I mean, you got to, if you want freedom and liberty, you've got to unplug from that matrix.
Yeah, rescue your family. I mean, that's really how we see it. Like, rescue your family.
That's right. How about finances?
Finances.
Okay.
Because that's going to be an important point for people. Now, we're not saying you have to, you know, have $500,000 saved in order to homestead. But, you know, when we talk about finances, we're not just talking about saving for purchasing land or homestead, but we're also talking about learning to readjust. And this is, again, this is like changing your thinking about how you spend your money.
Right. Very important. Extremely important. You know, because a lot of people, they really want to do this, but their financial situation, quite frankly, sucks. And it's harder. It's harder that way.
Yeah, it is.
Doesn't mean you can't do it. And we even tell people this all the time, even if you have very little money, there's still a lot you can do.
Right.
And there's still ways to get started. And we, you know, we consult with people and talk about those things. We're like, well, my budget is very limited. And so, okay, well, here's what we can do. Let's not focus on the things that we can't do. Let's focus in on the things that we can do right now.
Well, and this goes back to the, are you committed? Because if you are committed, even with a small income, you will find ways to accomplish your goals. You won't see those as, well, see,
I just can't do it.
I just don't have the money. No,
you're going to find
a way. You go, well, I don't have the money. Either you find a way to make the money, or you find a way to do it cheaper. You find a way that isn't going to cost as much, or you really search around and you wait and you look for free resources that people are getting rid of, which we find that kind of stuff all the time.
Yeah, and we've got to talk about that sometime. There are certain skills that we recommend, like we put kind of higher than others, and we don't really have time to go into them right now, but that really pay off in interesting ways.
Yeah.
You know, like just one example, knowing how to process animals, knowing how to process animals well, has led to so many extra benefits.
Yeah.
Not just in creating extra income for us and then being able to process our own animals and do our own custom cuts and all of those wonderful things, but a lot of people have given us animals. They're just like,
get rid of them. They don't want them.
I don't want them.
They're too loud. They're too aggressive.
We've been given. You know, and this is a wonderful thing. Don't get me wrong. We're very thankful for it. And a lot of times they just don't have time or they just don't want to deal with it.
Yeah.
So we're more than happy to help them out.
Yeah.
But we've been given ducks and geese and roosters, chickens and
roosters.
And goats.
Yeah.
And we're like, okay. You know, it's like just want to be, you know, truth in advertising, you know, unless they don't want to know.
Right.
We're going to butcher these animals.
Right. And sometimes they do know, like, here, take these. Yeah. They're really aggressive. But they don't want to do it themselves.
Yeah. We were just given two geese that were just totally obnoxious and aggressive. And we're just like, yeah, I'll take, I sure, you know, I sure, you, yeah, we don't want them. Okay. We'll take them off your hands.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what? We have two wonderful geese in our freezer right now. One's 7 pounds, 12 ounces. One's like 6 pounds,
8 ounces
something like that. And those are going to make wonderful meals. And,
and
by the way, take a look next time you're at the store at even a commercial goose and look at the cost. It's really high.
Yeah, they're expensive.
Very expensive.
You know, for the bigger size goose, we'll probably spend around $65 or $70.
Yes.
And that's
just a regular commercial goose. That's not an organic, you know, pasture
raised. Right. And this one wasn't organic, but it was naturally, they were naturally raised.
It's on a homestead and they just were like, well, we're not set up for this right now.
Right.
You know, they're too obnoxious.
And just so you know, geese are a pain to process.
Oh yeah. They're the most difficult bird, I think.
Absolutely.
But
their feathers do not want to come out.
Yeah. It's very, even a defeatherer doesn't do a very good job with it. With geese.
Well, you know, and this is one of the things that is the beauty of training your children and teaching them these skills and not going, well, you're too young or, well, you don't have enough experience. Well, they're not going to get experience unless you teach them. And so Sean has really taken time to teach each of the kids the every step through processing birds so that we were gone. Dropping our son off at the airport and the kids took care of butchering the geese, and they defeathered, they did everything from the step from the live all the way into the freezer.
That's right. I just said, you know, hey, let me know how much they weighed.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, okay, does mom want the heads and the feet and the organs? And you know, sometimes we do different things with them anyway. Sometimes they go to the dogs.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just like, yeah, this is what we want. Go ahead and butcher the geese. Lindy had to take care of her rabbitry. I mean, there were some other things some maintenance issues that needed to get done. Just our vehicles started, generator started for maintenance purposes, and we just give them those tasks, and then we left. and they were done.
Yeah, and you know, again, these kids, it's not like they were raised on a homestead or even doing things like this. But in the last year and a half, we have vigorously, you know, it brought them in as part of the process so that we haven't gone, well, you know, just watch. At first it was, hey, watch a few times, and then I'm going to start leading you through each individual step. And it doesn't matter what it is, whether it was building a fence, planting trees, planting our garden, butchering animals, all the way from turkeys down to chickens, rabbits.
Construction, you know, like the building things.
Yeah. You know, so many skills that they've learned. And, you know, maybe some people would look at us and say, well, that's child labor. You know, your kids are working all day long. And they really are, especially in the summer.
Right. I mean, they're not right now. It's kind of cyclical.
Right. Right now, there's...
It's a lot less work to be done outside. It's in the middle of the winter.
Right.
And that's kind of good. It just... Those cycles. I mean, there's periods of heavy, heavy work.
Yep.
Lots of work. And I mean, I'm talking the kids will be working 8, 10 hours a day.
Right.
And then there's times when their workload is really low, like right now.
Exactly. But they're still capable of doing these things. And it's not only given us a little bit of freedom because we don't have to do every single thing because we've taken the time to train the children. And this is important with even housework, training the children when they're very young and wanting to work so that when they're teenagers, you don't have as much on your plate anymore. But not only that, it's given the kids confidence and it's made them feel like they're really contributing meaningfully to the homestead instead of going, well, we're just doing, you know, I sweep the floor and, you know, they really are. We know we can trust them. We can rely on them.
Yeah. One of the greatest benefits of homesteading is to be able to learn these skills and pass these skills on to your children.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we live in a society that is over specialized. You know, we all like, I am a mechanic and that's what I do or you know, whatever. I mean, it doesn't really matter. It's just generally speaking, the average American, and that was including us, didn't know any of these skills.
Well, yeah, I can't remember what I'm not going to make up a percentage. I suppose I could, but, of men today who don't know how to change their own tire. And it's increased significantly over the years,
right?
Because now you have entire generations of people that, you know, you call roadside assistants, like
right.
My tire breaks down. The article that I was reading in reference to this was pretty funny because it was written by a man who was driving along and he looked over and he saw a young man, probably 22, 23, standing there. It's his car, and an old man stopped to get out and help him change his tire. So here's this elderly man, you know, in his 60s or whatever, who has that experience because he learned how to do that. There wasn't roadside assistance for a long time, and now this 20-year-old some kid is watching this elderly man take care of his tire problem. And I just thought, you know what? That's what we're creating today. In Japan, we saw that a lot.
Yeah.
Very specialization. You go to this person for that and this person for that. Everybody's their own expert.
Yeah.
Nobody is
a generalist.
And that's dangerous.
It is. And we're not, you know, laughing at people for that because, you know, we were that way to an extent. Yeah, but we're saying, hey, you don't have to stay that way.
Right.
And it's you're going to have a higher quality of life.
Absolutely.
By doing these things, by learning more skills, you feel more confident, you're more capable. And it's a good thing. And it's really especially nice to see in children.
Yes, it is.
You know, or young adults, really.
Well, so. And the thing is, like, I think sometimes what holds people back from attempting to do things is fear of failure. And or maybe they're afraid they're going to break something. Or see, if I do this and ruin it, now I've invested, you know, this money and I've lost it. So they call in the experts immediately. And what we found is, in this case, YouTube is really, really handy, and reference books.
Sure.
You know, looking up in the book and studying it a little bit and maybe watching a YouTube video of someone doing exactly what you're trying to do and go, okay, I can do it. You probably won't do it perfectly and you might make a few mistakes along the way, but in the end, you'll have learned better how to do it and next time you'll feel more confident and ready.
Right. Right. And you know, there are some things that you'll say, okay, well, this is either beyond my capability, regardless of whether I watch a YouTube channel or not, and that's fine, or it's not worth my time.
Right.
Okay. And that's fine too. You need to make those decisions. We can't do everything ourselves. However, what you need to factor in when deciding whether or not to do it yourself or to, you know, take your vehicle to get it fixed somewhere else, for example, is to bring in the experience and the learning, the skill factor. Okay, so it may take you longer and it may not, you know, financially pencil out in the end as far as your time, but you also have to consider the value of learning that skill. You know, learning these skills is a huge part of that. Even if you decide later, okay, I know how to change my oil. I can redo my own brakes. I can do some basic engine repair. Now I'm not going to do that, but having that skill is really important.
Right. Yeah.
You know, it can transfer to other things that may come in handy later. So again, don't discount the value of going through the process of learning that skill, even if you, in the long run, don't decide to do that all the time for yourself.
Right. Exactly. So do you want to get onto the finances?
Yes.
We kind of got sidetracked on skills again.
How that happened.
I don't know.
Okay. So how about we kind of just move this quickly? This is a huge topic. But for finances, like we've said, you know, it's really important to set yourself up financially as best as possible.
Right. And so the very first thing, the first step to financial health is you've got to stop spending.
That's right.
You got to stop spending.
Right. You got to stop the bleeding.
Yes, stop the bleeding. So yeah, we have some steps here, but you know, if you don't stop the spending, you'll never be able to pay off debt. You'll never be able to save up for a property. You'll never be able to get even a nest egg for you when you do get on your property to buy tools and to get animals and to buy the feed and everything else that you need to get established.
Right.
If you're committed, you're taking it seriously.
Yes, exactly. And just like we've talked about weaning yourself off the media and unplugging from the matrix, so too you have to wean yourself and unplug yourself from the financial consumerism model.
Yeah. It's easy, I think, especially for women, and I'm speaking from a woman's point of view here, to fill our empty time or empty hours with shopping. And, you know, that becomes an issue. It's almost becomes like a relaxing time. You go out shopping and you buy a few things and you feel like, oh, that felt really good. And it ends up being things that maybe you don't even need or use.
Right.
They just sort of sit there. Or you go to someone's house and you see something cute and you go, oh, where'd you get it? And the next thing you know, you're running into the store to get this one item, but you end up leaving with 10. Because that's the whole point of the store.
Right.
The store's whole entire job is to try to promote spontaneous purchases.
That's
like,
right, yeah.
Oh, I didn't plan for it, but gee, I really need this because now I see it.
You were telling me you were doing some research and you told me how there's a certain amount of unplanned purchases that on average per shopping trip.
Yeah. So statistically, shoppers make 3 unplanned purchases during 40% of all store visits. So if the stores can get you to there, the more often they can get you there, the more unplanned purchases you're going to make.
Right. So I get the lesson learned there is obviously reduce the amount of trips you're taking and then be very disciplined on what you need to buy. You know, use a list.
Yes.
And only the list.
So this last time we went to Costco, I almost need to put on blinders, like horse blinders, because I can get caught up in this too. I am not perfect. I'm not pretending to be. And so this last time though, we actually only did buy what was on our list. And we went through and I beelined it straight through. I didn't even look around to the left or right. I was just like, zoom, you know, straight back to what I needed, grabbed a few things we needed. And we did get a couple of samples. We did not buy the stuff. We just ate the samples. And then we were out of the store.
Right.
And, you know, when I left, I went, wow, we didn't, you know, we spent so much less than I had expected because it's Costco and it's, you know, you go, ooh, they've got this and they've got that. But being able to stay disciplined because they will put, you know, sale items out and they'll put what they think is going to be one of the most popular items at the end caps.
Right.
To really draw you in the purchases.
It's marketing and, you know, you never knew what you needed until you got there.
Right.
It's like, now, oh,
tell the story.
I never
like,
knew
you know,
I needed that, but exactly. I need that.
But now I need it.
That's right.
And you know, and
of course, it's a want, not a need.
Right. And if every single time you're getting ready to make a purchase, you ask yourself that: do we really need this? Is this something that is going to be useful in multiple ways? Like we were talking about tools, being able to, you know, use it in multiple functions. That's how I look at my kitchen. You know, there are some really cool tools out there that are only made for peeling garlic or only made for peeling an onion. But I don't get those. I just do it by hand or, you know, I have my kids come in and help me peel stuff. I can get 100 tools that do one specific thing in my kitchen and it's really spiffy and cool. But it's really better just to have fewer tools that do a lot of things.
Yes, right. And high quality.
Yes, high quality. And so, you know, you're dealing with fewer, but you have a lot of functionality in your kitchen and in your home. And so really when you're going through and you're looking at things to purchase, stop and ask yourself, do I need this?
Right. Now, so for those that are getting ready to go back to land, in a lot of cases, they're taking pay cuts. You're reducing their income. They want to get out of the rat race. They want to get out of the cubicle, and they want to get back on land. So in a lot of people's cases, you're going to be working with less money.
Yep.
And this is why this step's so important. Obviously, stop the bleeding, and you know, but part of that is just controlling yourself and putting some controls in place that will really help you. We talked about a couple of really good ones here.
Well, another is eating out.
Yes. Let's get to that in just a second. But those controls, like fewer trips.
Yeah.
You know, just because we know the unplanned, and then working off a list, obviously. If you were, you know, 100% could work off a list, then the fewer trips might not benefit as much, although it would in gas and other things.
Right.
But if you combine those two, fewer trips, working off lists and only lists, you'd be doing a whole lot better.
Yeah. You really would.
You know, needs versus wants. You know, we really are terrible. Our culture is terrible. We buy off wants and more so than even needs.
It's true. And, you know, I think sometimes people think they need something when they really don't need it. It's a want. I don't know if they're fooling themselves personally or if they truly go, no, that this is, you know.
Well, we need this.
We need this. Yeah. We need this. You know, what are we going to do with our coat if we don't have, you know, this spiffy coat rack?
Oh, right. Of course.
You know.
The coat rack.
Well, yeah, we need a coat rack. I mean, so there's a lot of things that we pretend that we need in order to justify these purchases. And what we're trying to say is, evaluate it realistically and go, well, is there another thing that I already own that I could use for the same purpose?
Absolutely. And here's one more, and then we got to move on. And that is taking the great lesson from the Great Depression. You know, the old saying that basically says, make do or do without. And I think there's one more in there. Use it up. Use it up, make do or do without.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't have the ability like, oh, yeah, that's kind of wore out. I'll just buy another one. Use it up, wear it out, or make do.
Yep.
Okay, so if we start applying that now, even before you get out there to homestead, that will do you well.
Yeah.
And a lot of times you're going to, like, maybe it's like you can add that, you know, fix it.
Yes.
Fix it.
This is what we did last year because, you know, with so many kids, winter, you have to purchase wool socks. Everyone needed wool socks. And as we got through the winter, because the kids were going inside and outside so frequently, they were wearing their wool socks all the time, we started getting holes. Well, I would say probably a year and a half ago, if someone said, oh, I have a hole in my sock, I would have said, okay, we'll throw it away. We'll replace that. Mm-hmm. That's not what we did last year. Because I'm like, you know what? We're pushing through. You're making it through winter. And so what we did is we darned them. We literally went through and fixed those socks. That ended up being almost Ella's part-time job. Last winter, people would go, oh, I have another hole. And she's sitting there, you know, sewing up these socks. Well, could we have bought new ones? Yes,
sure.
Absolutely. But we knew, like, you know, we've got 6 weeks left where they're going to really have to wear these, or we've got 8 weeks. And we don't want to spend all that money to go buy new wool socks.
Right. And so realistically, it was a small financial savings, but it was a huge mental shift.
Yeah.
And it was skill learning and just a mindset change.
Right.
Really.
Exactly.
What was the real value? We were making do.
Yes.
We were fixing it. You're using it up. You know, a lot of times we throw stuff away before it's, you know, you get a tiny little hole in your sock, throw it away.
Right.
Well, I could get 6 more months out of that sock, you know?
I mean, until your big toe is totally sticking out. Well, I
mean, yeah, if you, you know, fix the hole and get another 6 months out of it.
Patch that puppy. All right.
So that's an important mind shift. So start doing that now.
Yes. Yeah. Start doing things, looking around and going, well, I would normally throw that out. What could I do to fix it or to reuse it for something different in our home?
Okay, I gotta give one quote from Fight Club.
Okay.
All right, so here it is. We buy things we don't need with money we don't have to impress people we don't like. I love that quote.
I do too.
I love that quote.
Yeah, and it's true. It's very true.
All right, so the next thing is...
Well, we're talking about eating out.
Oh, yeah. That's right. That's an important one for... isn't it like nowadays Americans spend so much money at restaurants? Eating out is just very, very common now.
It's just
part of it. I mean, any budgeting tool that you have is going to have groceries, eating out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's going to have that category because pretty much everyone does it.
Yes. Yeah. And we're not saying don't eat out. But this is an area that, again, you need to evaluate how often are you eating out. I think they say that the average American eats out 2 to 3 times a week. Now, that actually, you know, you go, 2 to 3 times a week. I think I know almost everybody that does that.
Right.
That, you know, especially if they work and they just go out to lunch. They don't even think about it. They go out to lunch. But what we're also including is things like coffees. You know, instead of making your coffee at home and being content with that, you go to the coffee shop and you grab coffee. Well, add that up. How much money are you ending up spending at a coffee shop each month?
Yeah, and then multiply that out and then give yourself an annual figure.
Yeah.
That'll be very eye-opening.
Yeah, the U.S. food and drink industry right now, and this is, you know, restaurants and cafes and things like that, is a $700 billion a year business.
Wow.
That's a lot of money coming from Americans spending money there when they could be, you know, eating more and drinking more at home. So this is an easy place to drain your money or to make gains and to say, no, we're not going to do that anymore. And use up what you actually have in your home and start learning to make more meals or prepare. If you say, oh, we're going to be out running errands during lunch, well, bring something with you.
Or how about try not running those errands during lunch?
Yeah. You try doing it between meal times so that you don't need
to. It's an area of discipline. This is where it goes back to commitment. Are you committed?
Right.
And as far as, again, not saying don't eat out. Give yourself a budget. Mm-hmm. Stick to it.
Right. And in this case, you know, we don't put all of our money into envelopes. But in some areas that we know that we're, you know, more tempted or whatever, this may be an area for you where you want to get an actual physical envelope, withdraw the money that you're allowed to use on a monthly basis to eat out and stick it in that envelope. And when it's gone, it's gone. You don't get to eat out anymore.
That's right. What you'll do is you'll get a lot more creative.
Yes.
And you'll hopefully stick within that budget, but you'll get more creative.
Mm-hmm.
And you just won't be so free with whatever it is that you're doing.
Right. Exactly. So help yourself by setting those limits.
We would say that would apply to any problem area.
Yes.
That you have financially. For men, maybe it's you go to Home Depot to get 3 things and you come out with 10.
Because you just needed that new drill.
Oh, yeah. That was a need. Total need.
Needed it.
That actually was a need. So anyway, so if that's a problem area, you know, with project money, I can be terrible at this. I'll be working on a project, and instead of, you know, creating a budget for it and sticking to that budget, I just go with it, and I have a tendency to grab other things that I don't necessarily need at the hardware store.
Right.
So, you know, if we have to know our problem areas, and then in those areas, we recommend using the envelope system.
Yeah.
We're graduates. We've said this before. We'll say it again. Of Financial Peace University. We read Total Money Makeover. So we are fans of Dave Ramsey, but I want to give a quick disclaimer here. We like him. I think he's incredible when it comes to money management and debt reduction. We do not follow his investing advice. I don't have time to go into explain all that right now. We have a very different investing philosophy than most people.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's say, you know, most people would be just fine with his investing advice. We are not. So when we talk to people, we say, yeah, go through Financial Peace University, read The Total Money Makeover. But as a disclaimer, we do not follow his investing advice.
Right. Yeah. And so when we get back to this purchases, one of the other places that I know is really, really easy to get out of control is online shopping.
Oh, yeah. It's easy.
Because
especially that one-click purchase.
Yeah. It's just, you know, whether, yeah, I mean, Amazon has set it up to where you don't even have to be cognizant of the fact you just spent money. You just push a button and it's
done.
It's just done. And then it magically appears at your door and you really sometimes don't even think about the fact that you just paid $50 for
that item. I guess that's right. Oh, yeah. Hey, what's this purchase?
And again, yes, exactly. And again, online shopping or even looking online, browsing, all of those things, you can sometimes end up purchasing something that you never even thought you knew. And it can be as simple as, oh, I look at this book and then I'm looking at reviews and then someone mentions something. And so you go look at that and you go, oh, wow, that's a cool little thing. And what is that? And then the next thing you know, you're purchasing a thing you never even thought about before.
And you probably never end up using.
Yeah. You know, you go, oh, we really need this. And so I'm going to look online for it. And the next thing you know, you've purchased, you know, the entire set, you know, instead of just the one, which you thought you were going to buy.
So here's a great thing for those that are heavy online shoppers. You know, specifically if maybe you have one place where you go and buy a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So like Amazon, real quick and real easy, go to your account and look at the last 5 purchases that you made. I mean, look at them and analyze them. Okay, the last 5 purchases, you know, hopefully that was over several months, but maybe it was over the last, you know, 2 or 3 weeks. And analyze it. Did I read that book? Did I use that tool? You know, did I, whatever.
Do I even know where this is now?
Yeah, exactly. Do I even know where it's at? Did I use it at all? Was it a worthwhile purchase? If I went back and had to do it again, would I have purchased that? You know, that's a good exercise and assessment of, you know, of the real situation.
Yeah. And you know what maybe could help, you know, if a particular person, maybe the wife is used to just getting online and just doing shopping and click, click and purchasing this and that. And the husband goes, oh, what's that, honey? And it's like, oh yeah, I bought that last week. And don't worry about it. You know, you see nothing.
There's nothing to see here.
Exactly. Nothing to see
keep
here.
Moving on the conveyor belt.
maybe one of the good practices you could institute is to say neither one of us purchase anything without running it by the other person.
That's good.
Because, you know, even if it's $20, you go, it's only $20. It's only $10 or whatever. That's a continual purchase. It's like $20 here, $20 there. And then maybe your husband's making some purchases. And the next thing you know, you've spent $300 this month on purchases that neither one of you even knew the other was buying.
Right.
If you really do need it and it really is going to be helpful, then why not pass it by your spouse and them go, yeah. So you have you have an outside person evaluating the necessity of that purchase as well. It's not just you going, oh yeah, see, we need this.
That's
we
right.
absolutely
need.
Need this.
Absolute need.
Yeah. And the other person going, no, don't we have this and that can do the same thing? Or don't we have a book about that same
right.
thing over
or
here?
We already have one and it only needs to have a little repair and let's use that up.
Right.
Right.
So that would be a really good way to start lowering your purchases online is running it by your spouse continually. And do not give your children access to your accounts if they end up going in and purchasing. I've actually heard of people whose kids are doing that.
Right.
They're, you know, going in, well, I just bought, you know, this album or this book or this product.
Be careful on things like iTunes and Amazon, Instant Video, stuff like that.
Yeah.
That's
well, even on Heroes thing, he accidentally ordered something and I had to call Amazon and go, what's this purchase? And they tell me, oh, it came from this iPad that,
it's like a game or something.
Yeah. That I don't know. He turned it on and snuck through everything. And
he's 4, by the way.
Yeah. He's 4 and ended up purchasing something that I had to cancel. Fortunately, they gave us our money back, but just saying, you know, be careful that your kids.
Yeah.
You know, don't have access to those things. Okay, so the next one, this is an interesting little poll. According to a Harris poll that was done for the American Psychological Association, the number one source of stress in America is money.
Yeah.
And it has been ever since they started the surveys in 2007. So if you are stressing about money, it's normal. It really is.
It's normal, but it doesn't have to be that way. It's something that we all want to work on. Because why? Do we really want to have a stressed out life over money?
Yeah, no.
Okay. No, we need to change our thinking. We need to change our, maybe our standards, maybe, mm-hmm. Evaluating needs versus wants, all those kinds of things. So again, we recommend, you get with a program, a debt reduction program, usually for most people,
mm-hmm.
this is what they need, and ruthlessly execute that program.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, and one of the things, too, that can really cause a lot of stress is unexpected emergencies or unexpected expenses that suddenly come. But if you have a little bit of savings, you have a buffer, you have something where if you have suddenly you need new tires on your car and it's going to cost $600.
Right. And if that's an emergency for you, that's a problem.
That's a problem. It should be like, oh, we have that in our savings. We've got, $1,000. We have a small emergency fund, and we can cover that in cash, and then
quickly work to build it back up.
Yeah, get your emergency fund back up.
Yeah. So we personally kind of follow Dave Ramsey's steps, and his first one is save $1,000 fast. Okay, this is for people who are they're pulling their hair out, they're stressed out, and they probably have a lot of debt.
Mm-hmm.
But his first step is save $1,000 fast, and again. Why? To have that small emergency fund. So, because when the inevitable expenses come up, like tires, for example, or
they always do. They always do.
It's funny though. It's like that's actually a known. You can
plan for that. I know
tires. Most people don't.
Yeah. Auto maintenance.
Oh, I need tires. Yeah. Like that was a
surprise.
A surprise. But it could be your refrigerator goes.
And you need that new $3,200 refrigerator. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah. but if it breaks and there's like no fixing it or whatever, and you just need to replace it.
Right.
That you can do that. And then all of a sudden the emergency just turns into an inconvenience.
Yes.
So that's his first step, save $1,000 fast. Then he goes into debt reduction. Okay. So a lot of people go right into, okay, I need to get out of debt. And they have no money, and their emergency fund is their credit cards, and
right.
trying to get out of debt.
So any emergency happens, and now you've just put on a bunch of another charge on your credit card.
Yeah, yeah. So again, save that $1,000. We recommend that. That's, mm-hmm. And it's not just Dave Ramsey that recommends the $1,000.
Yeah, almost right everybody. Yeah. And you'll talk to if you look read any books on money and finances. They're always going to recommend saving $1,000 or sometimes $2,000 in your account to have money ready for an emergency.
Right. Now you go into debt reduction. And this is where we think preparing to homestead is important. You don't want to come out and homestead with a bunch of debt.
No.
No matter how much time you have, you can make gains in this area. I mean, as far as debt reduction is concerned. So you develop a small emergency fund, and then you need to go into a debt reduction program, okay? Now, again, we're not going to go too deep into this right now, but there's several different methods that you can use. You can take all your debts, and obviously the first thing is knowing what you have, laying it all out. What are the interest rates? What's the balance? What's the minimum payment?
Cry for a little while.
And then, one of two methods. Well, there's many, but here's two. First one is that you take the highest interest rate, pay off that debt first, and then go down via interest. Whatever's the highest interest rate, that's what's costing you the most money, when you just run pure numbers. And so people will pay that off that way. Okay. How we did it and how Dave Ramsey recommends it is you take your smallest balance and you hit that one first, and then you work from smallest to largest, regardless of the interest rate. There's psychological effects from doing that. You gain confidence. Your smallest debt is something like $200 or $300.
Right.
You knock that out right away, and all of a sudden, instead of paying minimums across the board or paying a little extra across the board, you knock that one out. So you pay it off immediately. All the other debts you're paying minimums on, and you're just like, yes, I got rid of one of my debts.
Yeah.
And then you take that money and you apply it to the next smallest debt, and so on. And okay, it's called a debt snowball. Perfectly good way to do it. I think it's a great way to do it.
It's motivating.
Yeah.
It really is, because as you can pay off those lesser debts, then you have all that big chunk to put toward the next, and it feels good because you can go, oh, wow, we got 2 credit cards paid off in 3 months.
Right.
Like, they're gone.
Gone.
And that's just a great feeling. Sometimes the highest interest rate ends up being also your highest balance, and so it takes a long time to ever see movement toward paying off debt. And it's, you know, again, both of those methods are fine, but I really do like the lesser, because then you're just, you know, you see movement right away. And that's motivating and exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's obviously what we recommend you doing. And then, again, it's real easy at this point when people start getting some momentum and, you know, they're feeling confident to get complacent.
Yeah.
And there's usually one of two ways that people get complacent. The first one is they just get kind of tired of it. And, you know, they've been going for a while and they got a couple debts paid off and then they're just slacking.
Yeah.
And then that's when you really have to go back and look at your values, your goals. And, you know, it's like, okay, I reevaluate. Am I as committed as I think I am?
Right.
You know, and that's usually what all that takes, is going back and keeping focused on your goals and, you know, rededicating yourself and being committed.
Yeah. And, you know, and you have to constantly monitor where your money's going, what you're doing
during this
process, because, like you said, as you start getting off track, you can get a little lazy. You go, oh, well, we don't eat out that much, or we aren't buying that much. And if you really sat down and started, you look at your last month and you go, oh, wow.
More than I thought. Yeah.
And it always is. It always is. So, constantly evaluating and reassessing your expenditures, but also recommitting yourself on a continual basis and keeping your eye on the prize.
Yes, exactly. Obviously we recommend, again, we don't have time to go into so much detail, but budgeting tools, you need to do a budget every month and you need to track your expenses. And there's lots of pretty easy way to do that, through your bank or mint.com and all these different places that you can track, and so you can see exactly where your money's going.
Right. Which is really helpful. And then at this point you start actually saving. Once your debt is paid off, you start really actively saving money so that you've got a nest egg set aside. And first of all, that gives you a little bit of leeway. If you do get out there and your hours cut, or maybe you are giving up your job in town and you're trying to start something on your homestead, well, you're going to need a nest egg. You're going to need some money to be able to live off of while you're building that business. And if you can start doing this before you even make the move and have enough money to allow you to move into the homestead and to not worry every month about making your bills, it's going to make your transition a lot easier.
Right, and your establishment phase go that much faster.
Yes, yes.
So we always contend that anyone can get 3 years worth of work done in 1 year. Okay, that's, we believe that, and that's not from some crazy natural ability or superpowers. That's just planning, managing, having goals, and, you know, most people are just not that productive.
Right.
Okay. If we're honest with ourselves, we're just not that productive. We can all do a lot more. And that doesn't mean working 16, 18 hours a day. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about being focused and having goals and managing your time well.
Right.
It doesn't require a ton of money, but the better position you can put yourself in, the quicker you're going to be able to go.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, don't, like we talk about minimalists sometimes, don't think that it's like, oh, we're going to be content with less.
We're not going to need any money.
You are going to need money.
Yeah.
You need money for, you know, feeding animals if you plan on having animals.
Right.
And fencing in order to keep the animals in and protected, and outbuildings. There's so many things you need money for.
You know, as opposed to the animals, raising animals for food and going to the grocery store. You go to the grocery store, you pay as you go.
Right.
As you need the food, you pay for it, you get the food. Raising animals for your own food, you pay it all up front.
Right.
That's just the truth. And, you know, yeah, it's a better deal in the end for many different reasons. Mm-hmm. But you're paying up front.
Yeah. And we always tell people, you know, we've worked with a lot of people up here, and you know, they think that, oh, this budget I have of this is in, and it's like, oh, it's probably going to cost more and take longer than you think.
Yes.
It always does, and it always has. So be prepared. Whatever you think you might need, try to have more.
Yeah. Add 30%.
Yeah. Because
it's a good rule of thumb for project management as far as budgets are concerned, is you budget it out to the dollar and add 30%.
Yeah, because it always costs more than you think it's going to cost. There are ways to save money on things, but you know, in the end, it's probably going to be both taking you longer and costing you more than you think.
Yeah. So again, saving, once you get rid of that debt, and that's again, if you have a bunch of debt, in our opinion, we don't really think you have any business saving a whole lot or investing a whole lot. Get rid of that debt. That thing is going to be, you're going to be so glad to get that off your back.
Yeah. It's a burden, and it increases stress. And
the borrower is a slave to the lender. That's just the bottom line.
And you don't want to be a slave. And then just the last thing is, you know, skill building and self-education. And we kind of covered that earlier.
Yeah, we really did.
Yeah.
So it was doing what you can where you're at.
Yeah.
To build skills. And one way to do that is obviously, you know, you can do things like container garden or garden wherever you're at.
Mm-hmm.
You can reach out into the community where you're at. Find out if there's people that are homesteading or that are, say, processing animals, and ask, hey, can I volunteer to come help?
Right.
It's a great way
to learn.
That's even if you don't have your own land.
The first time that we ever did butchering, that's what we did.
Right.
We went out and we
helped someone out, and it was great because we got a chance to see the process, you know, and get some hands-on training.
And another thing that you can definitely do before you get on the homestead is learn how to cook from scratch. Now, I'm not meaning like, you know, you're buying cans from the store. If that needs to be your next step because your family is used to eating maybe frozen foods or things like that, then that you can make that transition a little slower. But learning to make, you know, beans from the dried beans to a full meal, learn to use basic ingredients, because when you do get out in the homestead and you're now producing tomatoes and your own meat and your own vegetables, and you've got dry beans and peas in your food storage, well, if you have never taken time to learn how to cook, it's going to be a very time-consuming process. Believe me, even knowing how to do it, you have to be starting some of these things the day before. And if you haven't trained yourself to do it, it's going to be very difficult, and you're probably going to be eating at 9 p.m., possibly midnight, because you're like, huh, I forgot to do this step. And so, you know, now you're trying to learn all these things. Cooking from scratch is something you can easily learn while you're still living in the suburbs or in the city.
Okay. I think that's about it, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's, our verse for today is Proverbs 14:4. Where there are no oxen, the manger is clean, but abundant crops come by the strength of the ox.